This is Robert Stark, and I am joined here with a returning guest, the Truth Will Live.
How's it going?
Great. So we're going to be discussing the issue of aesthetic and cultural decline. So you have a background in art history.
Yes, that was what I studied in undergraduate in college.
And you've discussed this issue a little bit in some of your YouTube videos, but you haven't really gotten into that much detail about it, but you've touched upon it.
Yeah, I haven't talked about it too much yet, just because I'm still kind of introducing myself. Takes me a long time to... And, you know, it's more, I guess... Well, I can't really decide if I want it to be, like, a political channel or a... philosophical. I think I kind of want it to be both, but hasn't really been completely established yet. So, yeah, I just haven't made that many videos yet. But
You're fairly new to all this. You just got started.
Yeah. Yeah, I've only been doing it for like a month or two. Maybe a couple months.
So, I mean, this is an issue that I'm very much interested in because, I mean, I also have the same background in the arts because I don't have an art history degree, but I work professionally as an artist and I sell my work in galleries. So I'm very interested in arts and anything to do with aesthetics. And it's something that there's been such a decline in aesthetic standards, but it's not something that is talked about. I don't think it's talked about that much. It is talked about, but in the kind of I've noticed is the people who are most involved, who care the most about aesthetics, who are involved in stuff like the arts, for example, they tend to be more associated with the left. But one of the main things I really sort of dislike about mainstream conservatism is they tend to have just about pretty much zero interest in aesthetics, arts, and culture.
Yep. No, I have a theory about this. And it's the same with, film and, just any sort of art or music in general all seems to be predominantly left-wing. And I think I've thought about this. I could be wrong, but I think maybe the reason for it is that conservatives are too busy, like, doing things like raising families and, you know, doing normal people things, whereas leftists are kind of more, tend to be, like, more eccentric and more, they have, like, more time. And they're more of kind of like follow your dreams type people rather than like follow the, you know, the path that's been set out for you type people. So maybe that's why like Hollywood and all of that stuff is dominated by left-wing people. I could be wrong. It would make sense though, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
I think you're right about that. But I also think that conservatives tend to focus all their energy into politics. I mean, conservatives are, you mentioned they're busy like raising families, but even conservatives who are not busy, they spend their free time and their energy in regards to blogging, they put it all into politics, but there's less interest in writing and in culture because you have more of an impact on society through influencing the culture than you do through talking about politics.
Right. There's a lot of conservative, like, cultural commentators. I would say, like Roger Scruton and Theodore Dalrymple and people like that. I feel like there are a lot of people like that, but there's not, like, they're on the sidelines, like, critiquing the culture. Like, they're not actually creating like works of art and films and television shows and that type of thing.
What are some of the things, studying art history, that have influenced your views? Are there any particular, I mean, what particular artists and genres of arts or eras of the arts have interest you the most, modern art or mm-hmm. or classical arts or impressionism?
Well, when I was in college, I was really into, like, contemporary and modern. And, you know, I still appreciate it. I'm not, like, totally one of these people that's like, oh, that's not art, blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, I thought it was really clever and really intellectual. But at the same time, there was always this inkling in the back of my mind, like, since we've, like, made the switch over to clever commentary, and that's what art is, we've sort of, like, lost the technical skill that's needed to create, you know, like, Renaissance-type art. And I think there's like, this trade-off there, because I think, you know, when the modernists first came out, I don't think in a million years they would have thought that because this became the predominant thing, that technical classical art would be sort of lost with it. And the other thing is, like, I think, like, I still can appreciate people like Jackson Pollock, because, like, what they were doing at the time was original, because they were the first people to do it. But then I always had this other weird feeling that, you know, that was, what, 40, 50 years ago, and people are still kind of doing, like, the splotch on a canvas and calling it original, and that's what they're still doing 50 years later. You would have think they would have moved on, because it's, like, once, I would say he like, killed painting in a way, and then it's, like, when people are still trying to do this abstract thing, it's like, well, people have been doing that for 50 years. Like, why do you need to keep doing it over and over? It's not clever anymore. It's not original anymore. It's not aesthetic. I guess, like, there's some sort of, like, minimal modern stuff that can be aesthetically pleasing. But it's, like, at some point it just becomes, like, a joke. And that was the other problem, because I was involved in music, like, punk rock specifically. And that, it was the same thing. Like, I thought it was really cool on the one hand. Like, I thought the original punks were cool. But then I was like, well, why are we still doing the same thing, like, 40 years later? Like, there's something else we should be doing. This should have died, you know? And that's what I kind of like about what a lot of conservative people are doing now, because, or, like, people on the alt-right, because, like, they're actually taking a risk. They're actually breaking taboos and treading into unknown territory instead of just doing the safe thing that people have been doing for 40 or 50 years. So
I think the alt-right attracts a lot of creative people. I think that's definitely true. But as far as, like, mainstream conservatives, like the kind of people who are into Fox News and the Tea Party, the left, I mean, the left views those people as a bunch of, like, fascists or extremists. They view, like, Fox News as being, like, fascist. But I mean, if anything, I find those people to be really boring. Like, you don't see that many creative types coming out of who are into mainstream conservatism. And I think the reason for that is most of those people, their two main interests is it's a coalition of people who are primarily concerned about just lower taxes, but also social conservatives who are concerned about issues like abortion and gay marriage. And that's why I think that's the case. But the alternative right attracts a lot of creative people.
It does. And the other problem with, like, the mainstream right is, a lot of the people, they're not, you know, like you said, they're kind of, I don't want to call them trolls, but it's kind of rude, but that's kind of, you know, they're like simpletons. Now, I sound like a huge, like, jerk. I don't want to sound like that. That's really rude of me to say. But we're all thinking it, so I'm just going to come out and say it.
So, yeah, you kind of, I kind of like the stereotype of, like, the New York art critic.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, a lot of the, like, leftist stereotypes about those people are true. And the problem, I think the reason why the right is always losing, or the mainstream right is always losing, is because they don't have, like, an in-depth understanding of why gay marriage isn't a good idea. They're just like, well, because this is the way it's been. Or, like, we want lower taxes because you're lazy. And it's just, like, it turns into this big caricature of itself. Because, yeah, a lot of the people, like, if you, like, the way I view things, I'm looking at, you know, what effect is this going to have on society as a whole? And, you know, has this happened before? Because a lot of people on the left and right don't really have that good of an understanding of the way history works. But with the left, it's like they're thinking we can just progress and progress and progress and, you know, remake humans into this new thing that's never been done, and it's going to be a utopian world, and we're so original. And, you know, they don't really have, like, an understanding of, you know, maybe, like, all of, you know, like, their gay rights, for example, being gay and, like, doing stuff like that is nothing new. Like, it's one of these things that kind of comes and goes. And I think, like, I'm interested in looking at, like, okay, well, I'm going to ignore my initial reaction and say, you know, love is love, blah, 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 because that's kind of like a feel-good cop-out in a way. And I'm going to instead look at, like, well, when there was, you know, in the Roman Empire and that type of thing, like, what was happening with gay rights, or not, I guess they wouldn't have called it gay rights, but what was happening with that then, and what was the effect of that, and was it good? Or, you know, it's just like, you know, people, you get people, like, quoting out of the Bible, and it's just...
Well, there's...
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with him, but there's this writer he's part of the alternative right or the new right or whatever. His name's James O'Mara, and he's also a homosexual, and he's written this book called The Homo and the Negro, but he's basically criticizing both sides, so he is pro-homosexual in the sense that his view is that he sees homosexuals as creators of culture, but a lot of people in the alternative right are not going to agree with that because they tend to have a negative view of homosexuals. But I think his theory is interesting about how he's basically said how the right has, like, shunned all the creative types. That's basically his theory. Are you familiar with James O'Mara?
No, I'm not. That sounds really interesting. And that's kind of like, I'm really into Camille Paglia, and that's kind of her. She doesn't say that directly, but she's, like, bisexual, and her whole thing is, like, all of, you know, this has happened, this proliferation of gay and gayness and all this stuff has happened before, and, like, I'm going to embrace it, but at least she has, like, a historical understanding of it. And, yeah, he might be onto something, but, yeah, maybe gay people are the creators of culture. But I think with the left, it's like they don't want to paint them as the creators of culture and, like, eccentric types. They want to view them as, like, normal, wholesome, or just like any other family types, which is, like...
Yeah, well, basically his theory is because... His reason why gays have had more energy, put more energy into creativity, is the same thing you've said about liberals, is they weren't brought down by raising families. So his criticism of the left is that the left wants to turn homosexuals into heterosexuals who go off and move to the suburbs and get married and have kids.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, you know, I don't have a problem with, you know, people doing what they want, I guess. It's just when you try, when you force it on everyone and you're saying, like, you must accept that this is, this gay family is a beautiful thing, and this, if you're, you know, that this gay couple is fantastic. And they did, at first it was like, with their thing, they were just saying, no, we just want to be tolerated. And then now it's like, it just devolved into this, you must think this is wonderful, otherwise you're a bad person, you're a homophobe, and you're horrible. Whereas, like, yeah, it sounds like this James O'Meara guy and Camille Paglia, like, they recognize it as, like, a deviation from the norm instead of trying to make it into the norm.
What you have touched upon in your podcast, you've talked about aesthetic decline in cities and how people have moved out to these suburbs and how that's gotten started. And that's sort of another issue with that ties in with the left and the right, because I mean, a lot of conservatives view that as a almost worship the suburbs and that kind of like ugly strip malls and McMansions and that kind of stuff. Well, liberals are more likely to be interested in things like historic preservation, and they're more likely to be willing to spend like big money to live in a place that has character, even if it means living in a smaller home.
Right. Yeah, and I'm totally in agreement with the left on that, because maybe it's because I grew up in the suburbs. I don't know. Did you grow up in the suburbs, or you grew up in like a urban?
Sort of. It's hard to just a little bit of both. I don't know if you're familiar with L.A., but I grew up in the west side of L.A., so it's kind of a mishmash of like of both in a sense. Kind of the same. Where I grew up was pretty. Have you been to L.A.?
No, I haven't. I don't know. I grew up in the suburbs, and I don't know, around here it's like all of these suburbs look exactly the same, and they all, like, you can't tell where you are because it all looks exactly the same, and it's soulless, and there's no thought put into it. It's just like, let's put up this strip mall quickly because it's functional. And this is another thing. It's like the left associates the right with, like, capitalism and maintaining the status quo, and that's like the essence of that is like suburbia, where everything is the chain store, everything looks the same, it's just soulless. And I can absolutely sympathize with the left, because I don't like that either. It's, you know, it's depressing, and I can't live in that, because I don't think any human should be. I guess some people just don't care. This is why I have a hard time, like, relating to people that just don't notice or don't care.
I think that's true, but I'd say about like 70% of people don't care about aesthetics at all.
But I've also been reading, you know, about aesthetics lately, and maybe these people would be happier and not without realizing it if they were in a more aesthetically pleasing environment. Because, like, why do people, you know, everyone loves going to Paris and going to Europe and all of these places, and it's because it's beautiful. And they want to get away from their, like, suburban nightmare because it's depressing. So I think, like, on some level, and I think a lot of this is objective, too. People will say, oh, what's, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But I read another article that said they've done studies, and they asked people from all different cultures and all different walks of life, like, which is beautiful. And everyone was basically in agreement. Because, like, yeah, everyone will go to Paris and say it's beautiful. Like, why do people go there? You know, like, they'll say that it doesn't, they don't care about that. But I think when it comes down to it, there's something, like, spiritual or transcendent about being in that environment.
That's another thing with the, I would say the alternative right is more Eurocentric, while the mainstream American right is very focused on American exceptionalism. And a lot of mainstream conservatives, like, they like to go on about how much they hate the French and have no interest in visiting Europe.
Yeah.
And it's a liberal, I mean, it's sort of a liberal stereotype, but it's true in a lot of cases.
Yeah. And it's funny because the left is, like, very Eurocentric without realizing that. Because they pretend like they're so interested in multiculturalism and diversity and all of these things. But then it's like they're always comparing Europe to the U.S. and we should be more like Europe. And look at Denmark. Like, they have this and that. And they're, you know, we could have that. And they're the ones who live in these, like, you know, old, or try to gentrify these old cities that are obviously European and have, you know, because they're historically built by Europeans. So it's interesting because they will, like, deny until the cows come home that they're not, but it's a strange phenomenon. But yeah, so I think the alternative right is a lot like the left in that regard. They're just open about it. Like, they don't pretend to love diversity and multiculturalism, but be Eurocentric. They are just outright Eurocentric. So it's kind of interesting.
And the other thing about the mainstream right is their view on economics. They're perfectly fine with seeing historic buildings torn down and wilderness areas paved over because they see it as part of capitalism and a part of the free market. Like, their belief is basically if it's private property, you can do whatever you want with it. You can destroy it.
Yeah. And see, I'm not really on that game either because it just destroys your roots. And I don't know. I don't really know that much about economics or capitalism or anything. I'd probably call myself, like, an economic moderate just because I don't really know that much about it. But from what I know, you know, people that have studied it, some will say that it doesn't matter. It just matters, like, the people who are involved because there are some socialist countries that are really nice, and there are some really capitalist places like Haiti, for example, that are just basket cases. And so they'll say it doesn't matter, you know, what the economic system is. It just matters the people and the culture that are partaking in that. And I think that's probably closer to the truth. But yeah, and I just don't see and that's kind of what the mainstream political debate in America is about, is economics. I guess there's some stuff with, like, immigration too, but most of it is based around economics, and I just find it hard to argue either way. I guess I probably would lean more right. I like Uber and stuff like that, but I also, you know, it's like both of being completely gung-ho about either capitalism or socialism just doesn't really resonate with me, because why would you, with capitalism, it's like, why would you entrust your entire civilization and culture to be run by the free market necessarily? I don't, because that, you know, that's kind of like democratic in its own way, and people might just go for the cheapest thing, and then you end up with just Walmart everywhere. Or maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know too much about this formally, but that's what it would seem like. But So yeah, I feel alienated whenever people start talking about economics. But I also don't want to give all my money up to social programs if it's just going to be, and it's always more and more and more, you know. And the other problem is, like, I wouldn't be opposed to social programs if they were evaluating how effective they are. But with a lot of them, it's just like, well, we just need to keep doing this, and there's never any, like, data or evaluation of, well, is this working? Like, with the public schools, for example, they'll just say, we need more money, and there was another thing that was, like, a big liberal obsession is universal preschool, which they were convinced was going to make everyone into an Einstein, and it didn't, but they're still pushing it. Like Head Start, I don't know if you know, heard of it, but it's like it doesn't really have any effect on anything. It's basically just free daycare. So it's like when they're not willing to actually evaluate if their social programs work or if they make things better or worse, then I'm going to be less inclined to support them. But I'm not opposed to the idea if it actually worked.
So one of the comments you were making in one of your shows is basically you were saying that there's basically no standards in how people present themselves in public. Like, you see people going around in their pajamas even.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the only standard that I see is that you're not allowed to impose a standard. So some people might call this anarcho-tyranny, which is, it's like an enforced standard of anarchy or no standards. So if you decide to impose a standard on yourself, that's seen as really restrictive and oppressive, and it's looked down upon. Like, if you said, it's looked down upon unless you have some sort of excuse, like a religious excuse, then it's like, well, why would you do that? Why would you have that standard for yourself? It's really unusual because, you know, we all want to be as free as possible and have as much freedom and given to everything that we want to do, because why not?
Were you saying that on one of your shows that you sort of felt like you needed religion to dress a certain way? You were saying you wanted to, like, dress in, like, black shirts?
Well, you know, you don't need to, but if you do that and you don't have some sort of religious excuse and you're just imposing this standard on yourself and you're really strict about it, it's highly unusual. And if you had kids and you were enforcing that those kind of rules on them or that kind of standard, and you weren't a part of, like, some religious community, it would just be seen as really unusual and unnecessary, and people would probably try to tell you, well, just let them wear what they want and do what they want. Because, like, you don't have a command from God to enforce it. If you just think that's the right thing to be doing, it's not really legitimized, which kind of makes sense, because it's like if everything is up to you and your decisions, what if decisions change? But if it's like this theological command that is unchanging, that is somehow seen as more legitimate, even by people who aren't religious, because it's just, you know, someone else propositioned that before you. You're not just making it up as you go along.
As far as how people dress and present their appearance, would you say that the problem is more that anything goes, or it's more that dressing, presenting yourself badly is is seen as a higher status than dressing well. You see a reversal in status in how you present yourself?
Well, the culture itself is really immersed in this non-judgmentalism. Like, you're not, if someone isn't up to standards or wearing their pajamas, we're just supposed to say, well, you know, like, to each his own, wear whatever you want, it doesn't matter. There's no, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't remember. Anyway, I was at the DMV the other day, and there was like a person dressed as like a furry. You know what that is?
Yeah. It's a sexual fetish.
Yeah, and you know, I guess it's rude to stare, but how can you not stare at something like that? And you're supposed to pretend like these things are normal. You're supposed to pretend like everything is normal just because it exists. No, there's no standard and no judgment because every opinion is deemed to be equal to every other opinion because every person is supposed to be equal to everyone else. No one has like a higher moral judgment. Like, yes, we know, obviously there are some people who are more intelligent, but every person is supposed to decide for themselves which people they're going to listen to, which people are the intelligent ones and which are the stupid ones. And when you have that, when there's no central authority, and I don't even just mean like, you know, because I've gotten people mad at me saying, no, because then that's like tyranny and the government, like you don't want the government enforcing you because that's totalitarian. I'm not even talking about totalitarianism. I just mean like a shared culture or a shared cultural standard. It doesn't really exist. And I think it's the result of egalitarianism because I think what it used to be was people knew that, you know, people weren't equal to them because there were social classes and there was like a more transparent hierarchy of people. Like, for example, like the Queen of England. And I think people can see that, and they would want, I think people either consciously or non-consciously wanted to emulate the people higher than them, the people with better taste, the people who were smarter than them. But we don't really have like those examples. Like now we have like the highest example are people that are supposed to be just like you, you know, like our celebrities, like people you can relate to, like George Bush, like he's your next door neighbor, like that's the president, like a guy that you can sit down and have a beer with.
Well, one example I'll give is I went to this, I was visiting this really exclusive hotel in Santa Barbara. I think it's where people, a lot of celebrities say they're like the average room costs like $1,000. And there were guys there. They were dressed with wife beaters, a backward baseball hat, caps, and tattoos. And this was like one of the wealthiest people in the world.
Wow. Yeah. See, it doesn't surprise me at all. There's like nowhere where you can really go that wouldn't have that type of thing like that because it's seen as really fascist to like impose a standard of dress or behavior on people. And what was I going to say?
What do you think about the whole campaign against like a fat shaming?
You know, I think it's I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I have this theory that it's like being promoted by fast food companies or But yeah, that's like a really, you know, obvious example. Like, you shouldn't strive. You should just, you know, if these people can't lose weight, we shouldn't shame them. We should just accept them for what they are instead of holding them to any sort of standard because it's oppressive and they feel it hurts their feelings. You know, we're so focused on everyone's feelings, and that's kind of like what we run off, what we run everything off of. What was I going to say before about the wife beater thing? I can't remember. I'm really mad because it was something important. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, sorry about that.
Has your personal fashion sense, how has it changed over time? What kind of, how did you dress when you were younger?
Okay, well, when I was younger, you know, I haven't changed very much, to be honest. I think, like, there have been points in my life where I tried to suppress the way I felt about things and the way I judge things because, you know, like, when you're in a culture that tells you don't judge people, that's elitist, you're a jerk, you start listening to that after a while because I don't think anyone in the world can ignore everything that's going on around them by just, you know, being themselves, especially if you have no one else that's doing that. But yeah, so when I was younger, you know, I was always, like, into fashion and that type of thing. But then, like, when I, you know, I went to, like, the schools that I went to were probably, like, lower middle class, pretty middle class, like, working class-ish. And there were a lot of people that wore, like, sweats and stuff. That was, like, a thing. And I remember, like, I thought that was really weird, but at the same time, I was like, well, those are, like, the cool people, so I'm going to start, like, emulating them because they're, like, high-status people. So I started wearing sweatpants to school to try to, like, hire my status, which doesn't make any sense at all. But, you know, when you're a kid, you want to fit in with people. You want to
Was that
be,
around the time
be accepted.
People were having that, where they were wearing, you'd see women with the, and girls with the sweatpants that said, like, juicy on their ass?
Yeah, probably. It was, like, also the time when people would wear, like, thong underwear, like, sticking out of their jeans. And,
did you do that?
No. But, yeah, I mean, like, when I was, like, this is when I was in middle school, and people were doing some pretty gross things, you know? But, yeah, I mean, it was like, this is, you know, it was like the hip-hop culture where people wear sweats and, yeah, like, juicy, that type of stuff. It's so lazy. It looks terrible. And, yeah, people still wear that kind of stuff. And I hate it. And now it's like, yeah, I mean, so in middle school, you know, I tried to fit in with people. So I tried to, like, you know, wear what they were wearing. And so that's just how, I mean, most kids would react to that kind of thing. You're not going to start wearing, like, a suit and tie to school if everyone else is wearing sweatpants all the time because you would look like a lunatic. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of – and then there was, like, times where I'd be self-conscious, like, I don't want to be too fashionable or too – like, look too much like I care because then people will think that I think I'm better than them, which is also crazy. But I've had people say that to me before, like, wow, you look so different from everyone else. And it's just like, you don't, when you're younger, you don't want that type of thing. You don't want to stand out. You want to fit in. But then, you know, as I've gotten older, it's just like, I don't care anymore. I'm just going to wear what I want to wear. And if I look, like, overly formal or, you know, different than people, then who cares? Like, I'm going to rise above the crowd. I don't care anymore. I think that's just a natural thing that happens as you get older. You stop caring so much what the crowd is doing and just go with what you know is right in your heart. Some people maybe don't, but...
Would you say, have you been a more of a nonconformist most of your life?
Yeah. I think it started when I was 14, maybe. Like, when I was a kid, I was tried to be very conforming. But then, like, you know, I had, like, teenage angst, and I never felt like I fit in, you know, in school or anything. So, yeah, I went through all the phases that, you know, teenagers go through when they're angsty and trying to be nonconforming. Like, I was a hippie and a punk and, like, a metal person and all of these things. And, like, you know, but the last few years I realized, like, it's all just, you know, all of that stuff. It's like you're putting on a costume. You're trying to play a part. You're trying to fit in with a group of people that are supposedly nonconforming, but then they all just conform to each other. So it doesn't really make sense. And it's kind of juvenile. And now it's like, you know, I still see those people, but it's like now I look at them and I'm like, you need to grow up. Stop playing dress up. And yeah, they probably would, if they heard me saying this, they would really hate me. And, you know, think I'm so much better. It's not that I think I'm better. I just, you know, gave up trying to please people who I don't think matter anymore.
How do you think people should present themselves and dress ideally? Do you think there should be some kind of a uniform standard, or you think it really depends on the situation?
You know, like, I think people should try to emulate people that they think have good taste. I think that's what people used to do, because when you look at a picture of people 50 years ago or 100 years ago or even, like, yeah, 50 years ago, it's like they look, you know, there's not this huge dramatic difference in how people of different social classes dress. Like, everyone looks pretty put together. I mean, maybe I'm missing something. Like, yeah, there's obviously some differences. And it's interesting because
Photographs from the 1950s, even, like, it was common for black people even to wear suit and tie on a regular basis.
Exactly. And now it's like we supposedly have this more egalitarian society, but you see, I think the difference between, you know, the middle class is, like, dying, but the difference between, like, lower class people and upper class people is even more stark than it used to be, I think.
Economically, in terms of how much money people have, the wealth disparities are increasing, but culturally, the culture is being dragged down. So, as I said, mm-hmm. the rich are getting richer economically, but culturally, they're emulating the proletariat.
That's true also. Yeah, that's a good point. I still see, like, a more dramatic difference, though. Like, I don't think that, I'm trying to think how to explain this. I guess there's just more variety. And I think that there is, like, a certain way of presenting yourself that, I don't know, I just feel like, yeah, it was like people used to strive to, yeah, like, emulate people that probably had more money than them, and now, yeah, you're right, it's the opposite. People strive to, you know, be mediocre in some ways, or to fit in, like what I did when
good,
I was younger.
A good example, if you look at the Republican presidential candidates, like someone from like George Bush is a good example. His mm-hmm. family were like old wealth New England blue bloods, but he went out of his way to create the sort of a phony persona of like a redneck.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, also there was this phenomenon of young adults and young people who are kind of like, if they come from money, they're like ashamed of it and they try to hide it. Which, you know, I'm not a fan of people flashing their money all around, but it's like if you're working class, that's seen as like somehow more noble. Like if you inherited money, it's like you're bad. You didn't do anything to earn that. So you're just like spoiled brat and screw you. You're like a bad guy. But if you like came from some working class or poor family, it's like you're like much more, you're seen as like much more noble in a way. And yeah, it's like you see people trying to emulate the working class. Like there was that trend like 10 years ago where, you know, Ashton Kutcher and all those people, they were wearing like trucker hats and
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, Pabst Blue Ribbon, drinking that.
But I mean, people in LA are pretty, in Southern California, they're pretty ostentatious about how they display their wealth.
Yeah.
They just have a lot of bad taste.
Yeah. I've never been there, but I don't know.
One thing you've talked about in your videos, you've talked about Judaism. You were saying that Judaism places less of an emphasis on aesthetics than European culture does. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I would. It's interesting. I don't really understand why. Maybe it's like that thing I was just saying about different bloodlines being attributed to different powers. Like maybe the Jews missed the artistic powers, and it was just given to the Europeans. But yeah, I don't know. I guess when you go into a Catholic church, it's obviously very beautiful. But when you go into a Protestant church, it's very plain. So it's not really
especially those like evangelical mega churches. They look like shopping malls, like Walmart.
Yeah, they're hideous. They're absolutely hideous. So it's mostly the Catholic Church that is so aesthetically focused. And maybe like Eastern Orthodox churches, but not quite as much as the Catholic Church. But that was a huge thing like during the Protestant Reformation because they thought it was like idolatry and everything. And I guess it kind of is, like it kind of maybe evolved from paganism, but that's kind of why I like it, I guess. So it kind of like repels me from Judaism because it's not, you know, what are the classical virtues, like the good, the beautiful, and the true? If it's not beautiful, then it's not going to attract me. And people say, well, oh, but you can just be this religion and then appreciate Catholic art or Christian art, or like you can't be Catholic just because you like the art or blah blah blah.
Isn't there a prohibition against making sculptures in Orthodox Judaism?
Yeah, and that's annoying too. Like if you can never have a sculpture, like what kind of life is that? I don't want to live without sculptures. And there's a prohibition on women singing in front of men, which makes me upset, too, because I think that's crazy. It really turns me off, you know?
What Luke was saying is the concept is in Orthodox Judaism is they build their temples in time instead of in stone and marble.
Yeah, I guess that is what it is. But that's why, you know, a lot of, like, Nazis or anti-Semitic people will say, oh, you Jews, like, you don't build any civilization, like, you're just parasites, blah, 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 which is kind of sad. But, you know, if they don't, maybe, and, like, I don't know, I've thought about this, like, maybe building all of these monuments and stuff is just fleeting. Because, you know, have you ever heard of that poem called Ozymandias before?
Oh, no.
It's like, who is it? I'm looking it up. It's by Percy B. Shelley, and it's basically about some king who built some monument to himself, and inscribed was, "I am the greatest king the world has ever known." But then when the poet discovers it, it's like nothing. Like, he's been reduced to, you know, a stump. And it's kind of like, well, maybe all of this material stuff is fleeting. And maybe, you know, that's kind of like the anti-worldly. But on the other, I don't know. I have a problem with this because, you know, if things aren't beautiful, then, you know, what's the point? Why do we have to be surrounded by ugliness? Is that what God wants? Is that God wants us to be in an ugly world to please him? That doesn't really make any sense to me. And people, yeah, what I was saying before, like, people will say, like, you can't be Catholic just because you like the art or just because you're drawn to the aesthetics. But, like, maybe for me, like, maybe that is the essence of God, or that is the essence of spirituality. Because if I'm, you know, at a mega church or, you know, some, like, hideous thing, like, I don't feel like God is in that room. And, like, if I can feel God's presence in a cathedral, isn't that what God is? Or maybe my theology is completely wrong, but...
Yeah, your theology is kind of a mishmash of a bunch of different things.
Yeah, this is my problem. I think I'm just, like, a perennialist. Like, I don't think any one of these religions is necessarily has a monopoly on truth.
Would your family disown you if you converted to Christianity?
Probably. So, yeah, that's not a good... I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't disown me, but they'd be really, really mad at me. So that's important because, you know, family is obviously really, is really important to me. So that's kind of annoying, you know? And, like, yeah, it's just, I think at this point I'm just going to call myself a perennialist and not commit to anything because none of it feels like, everything has its ups and its downs for me. Maybe I should just create my own religion, going back to that.
Yeah, we talked about that last time. One thing you were saying on the show that was interesting is you were pointing out that some of the Reform synagogues are more like cathedrals, the older ones, especially like in L.A., most of them have been built in the last 50 years, but some of the older ones that were built like 100 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's like the more, I think the reason why is because they're the most assimilated to modern Western culture. So it's more church-like. Luke said, like, if you go to a Reform synagogue, you wouldn't even realize you weren't in the church for like the first hour. Because they kind of have adapted all of that. And I guess the reason why Orthodox synagogues are so different is because they're trying to be anti-Western. But I don't think that means it has to be ugly. I guess I just don't care. But, like, if I care, maybe I don't want to be a part of that. I don't know. It's very confusing.
If you look at contributions to, say, like the arts and architecture, so there have been Jews who have made contributions to arts, but I'd say for the most part those individuals have been like pretty assimilated into European culture.
Right. Yeah, there's not that many like Jewish visual artists. There are like modern ones, but that's kind of a different thing because that's modern art is more of like an intellectual movement. But, yeah, there's not a lot that I can think of. Well, an interesting note was when I was in Israel, like, a few months ago, and there were, I went to this museum, and there were all these, like, Jewish artifacts, and they were really ornate and, like, you know, identical to, like, European manuscripts. But I had never seen anything like that before. I guess it was all destroyed or something. But it was kind of cool to see. So I didn't know that even existed. But there's so little of it, you know? It's just, like, seems like it's a lost thing.
Were you impressed by the architecture in Israel?
Depends on which city. Like, Tel Aviv is really modern, almost like Soviet feel. So, no, I thought it was... Actually, there were parts of it that were kind of cool. Like, there were some older parts that were interesting. I had felt like more like Italian or Mediterranean or something like that. Jerusalem was pretty cool, though, because everything has to be made in a certain kind of stone. But there were some, like, modern bridges and things that were thrown in that kind of, like, threw me off. But, yeah, like, the old city and that type of thing was pretty cool. But nothing that impressed me like what I've seen in Europe. So it didn't go that far. Unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess in Israel, the Jewish stuff in Israel, it's like either really ancient or it's like brand new. But
exactly.
I see the majority of stuff, a lot of it was created by, I guess, and what civilizations were there? There were the Byzantines and then it was the Ottoman Empire. So I'm sure a lot of it's from those.
Yeah, there was some stuff that was like left over from like when the British were there too that was in Jerusalem that was kind of cool, but... Yeah, I mean, nothing that impressed me, like what I've seen in France or anything like that, or even in the U.S. I think it's like a lot of the old cities here are more aesthetically pleasing than... I guess it's just like it has that Middle Eastern feel to it, which, I don't know, I guess that feels really alien to me for some reason. I'm not Middle Eastern, but... Yeah.
It's interesting you bring up the Middle Eastern thing because in L.A. We have a lot of Iranian Jews and like the kind of stuff they build in Beverly Hills. It's like it reminds me of the kind of stuff you'd expect to see from like the Arab like rich Arabs in like Dubai.
Right. Yeah. I mean they basically are Arab, sort of. I mean, I don't know that many Iranian Jews, but when I met, like, Mizrahi Jews in Israel, like, they look indistinguishable from Arabs to me. I mean, I highly doubt they're related to Ashkenazi Jews. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think the only thing they have in common is religion. That's my initial reaction. This is a little lot of, like, you know, Palestinian activists and anti-Zionist people will say is that, you Ashkenazi, you, like, colonizers, you belong in Europe, go back to Europe. But then, like, you get the people, like, far-right Nazis and stuff saying, oh, like, get out of Europe, like, go to Israel, like, you're not European, you're not white, like, so it's kind of like, well, you know, where do you belong? You don't belong in Israel or Europe, you know, where are you supposed to go, like, to the moon? Personally, I was going to say, I am, like, a cold weather person, and I feel like I'm, like, indigenous to some sort of northern climate. I mean, like, I don't tan at all. I get really warm. I don't like warm weather. So it's kind of interesting.
Have you gotten, like, your DNA tested?
Yeah, I got the DNA test, and I'm, like, almost 100% Ashkenazi, so... I just don't believe that we, like, came from the Middle East. It just doesn't, I don't look like I'm from the Middle East. I don't feel like I am, but.
When you went to Israel, like, you didn't, you're saying the Mizrahi people that you met, like, physically, they look nothing like you.
Absolutely nothing like me. I mean, they look like Arabs. Maybe, I think that they are. They just have, the only thing that's different, I would imagine the only thing that's different from them and Arabs is religion. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe there's differences, but I don't really believe that I'm, like, related to them. Yeah, so it's all very confusing. Long, where am I indigenous to? I don't know. I think Ashkenazi Jews look very European. But then it's like, you know, I'm not, people have, you know, moved to all sorts of places. Like, you know, white Europeans aren't indigenous to America, and we all live here, you know. And we live in South Africa and Hawaii and all these places. So I suppose it doesn't really matter anymore. But then it's like white nationalists will say that, well, Africans, like, get out of Europe. But then, you know, it doesn't, it's like if everyone has to go back to the place where they're actually indigenous to, that's not very many places that white people would be welcome. You know, it'd, like, just be Europe.
So you're saying it's hypocritical for them to advocate expulsions of all those people when they want to live in places like South Africa, Australia, Canada, America, Argentina?
I don't know. I mean, that's a really good question. I've actually never thought about this before. You know, I guess, like, if they conquered South Africa and America and Argentina, then so be it. But then, like, what if Muslims conquer Europe? Does that give them, like, a... You know, it's tricky. I guess, like, populations have always migrated and moved.
Luke was advocating on a show. He advocated the expulsion of basically... He's advocated the expulsion of the people.
Of which people?
Oh, he said all minorities should be given provisional citizenship.
Yeah, I don't think that's a very good idea. I think, like, you know, if he wants to make white nationalism in the USA work, he should, like, they should, like, cut out a portion and just, like, claim that. I don't think, like, expelling everyone else, there's just way too many people at this point, and most white people, like, are with the multicultural program. I mean, most of them are. I think white nationalists are a tiny minority of people. Maybe that might change. I think it actually, I'm positive it will change, you know, as white people become a smaller minority. But I think the only hope for them is, like, secession. That's, I don't think, like, deporting everyone else is going to work. What do you think?
But I mean, I like living in California. I don't know if I want to go up and live in northern Idaho.
Yeah, and I don't like, you know. Also, like, it's funny because, like, Luke is an Orthodox Jew. Like, do they really want him in their white ethno state? Probably not.
You know what happened? If there was a partition, he would be expelled. He might end up being expelled from both the white ethno state and the Jewish ethno state, and he'd have to go live on his own little island with Haim Amalek. you know the movie Castaway with what's his name? Where the guy's talking to his ball. It'll be Luke on an island by himself talking to a ball, pretending it's Haim Amalek.
Yeah, it sounds like what's going to happen. And, you know, I'm not, like, some sort of... I think Luke is hilarious, and that's why I like doing the podcast with him. And I'm not, like, advocating for the creation of a white ethno-state or... Like, that's not my job, you know? But, like, I'm just trying to, you know, maybe, like, other people do need to do that. I'm not going to be, like, the forerunner. That's ridiculous, because I don't think I would really be, like, welcome in that state anyway.
You might, if you've not actually faced a similar dilemma, you might be ostracized from both sides as well.
Right. Yeah, so I'm pretty much screwing myself over.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm going to have to go live on that island with Luke, too.
You'd have to go to the island and marry Luke and repopulate it.
No. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to white people in the next 100 years.
Oops. But before I wrap things up, do you have any like upcoming videos or ideas for videos, things that you haven't done before?
Yeah, I filmed like 2 videos today, and I don't know if I'm going to put them up because I don't know if they were that good, but one of them was about the reasons why people join left-wing movements. Kind of what we touched on before, it's because they are disappointed in capitalism, materialism, and, you know, like what America has become. And I'm just saying how maybe those reasons are legitimate. If they want to destroy capitalism, like, I get it. I get why. Just look at what it's created. It's created this, like, monstrous, cultureless void. But, you know, maybe there should be an alternative that's not so poisonous, and like, why do they have to support multiculturalism and all these things when they're not supporting capitalism? Because a lot of that stuff, I think, it's like, you know, one of the big reasons why multiculturalism is pushed is to create more consumers and. Or maybe that's wrong. I don't really know. But what else? And then I made another one. It was
okay.
Sorry. I made another video, and it was a response to this girl who wrote an article saying, "If you're a conservative, you're a bad person, and I'm gonna unfriend you on Facebook, and you're morally decrepit." And I was just responding to that. But yeah.
I would like to thank the Truth Will Live for being on.
Thank you.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.